Greetings to everybody, and I hope everybody is well, and they wanted me to make this, some of the things direct through Zoom, and this is some of the questions that I've received. I will go through these questions first, and then if there are other questions, they can also ask me directly. I will directly go to the questions first. First question is, the question is from Andy. For those who are connecting with the course freshly now, could you maybe say a little bit about who Shantideva was and where his teachings came from? Was it sutras, his gurus, or divine inspiration? Also, why was he considered unorthodox by his colleagues at Nalanda University? Shantideva was born as a prince in what kind of southern part of India, and then when he was young, he received the some instructions and empowerment on Manjushri, and he practiced Manjushri, and he had a great kind of faith and devotion to the Bodhisattva Manjushri. And I think he also learned some Dharma and things like that. And when he was about to be enthroned as the king, that night he had a dream. And in that dream, he saw Manjushri sitting on the throne that he was supposed to sit. And then Manjushri said, do you really want to sit on the seat, that, you know, on my seat? And then he woke up, and he thought that this was an indication to say that he should not sit on the throne of the king. So he ran away. And then he went to eastern part of India, and there he met a teacher, and then he studied there, he practiced, he became very learned, and realized master. And then he traveled everywhere, and you know, did lots of things. Sometimes not exactly, you know, like a monk would do. Like he would not stay in a monastery sometimes, and sometimes he would do lots of different kind of things. Like sometimes it is said that he stayed with beggars in a community of beggars for some years. For some years, he became the bodyguard of a king, and then later on general. Although he didn't, you know, there is a kind of anecdote that when he was the general of that that kingdom, then he was very successful, and everything he kept, you know, in peace and everything. But he didn't have a real sword. He only had a sword made of wood. And somebody found this out. that was his, maybe some people he was jealous of him. And then they thought that was a, you know, his weak point. And so they informed the king and said that, you know, you think your general is, very, very strong and very, very powerful, but actually he doesn't even have a sword. He has only a wooden sword. If you want, you can ask him. So next time when king met him, the king said, you know, can you show me your sword? Then the Santideva said, no, you should not see the sword. The king became even more kind of insisting. He said, you must show me the sword. So then he said, okay, but keep one of your eyes completely closed. You should see it only with one eye. And then he did that, and then he took out the sword from its sheath a little bit, and there was so much light coming out of that that it kind of almost blinded the king's eye. And so then he said, please put it back. So that kind of things are there. So there are many different kind of stories of this kind. And then one time he came to Nalanda University. And in Nalanda University, he was staying there, but he was neither attending classes nor giving any teachings. So he was just staying there in one of the, small hut. But he was not participating in anything. He was neither attending classes, nor teaching, nor, any kind of participation. And that was not didn't look very well. So people were not happy with him. And then they called him, Busuku. Busuku is, the seat, the syllables of bu, su, ku, eating, sleeping, shitting. So he's only doing these three things and nothing else, kind of. But he didn't break any rules. So they couldn't actually expel him. So they had a meeting, the kind of governing body or somebody like that had a meeting. And then they found a way. They said that, okay, we ask him to give a teaching. And since he has not studied or he's not participating, it must be that he don't know how to teach. So he will naturally go away because he wouldn't be able to give a teaching. And so then our problem is solved. So that's why they made they announced that this time Santideva or Busuku will give a teaching to everybody, so everybody should come. So they made a big throne on the, in the field, very high without any stairs, just to embarrass him. And everybody came. And then on the appointed time, he just appeared. He went and he just sat on the throne. They didn't even know how he climbed the throne. And he said, what kind of teaching you want me to give? Something that is already there or something that's new? So everybody said, something completely new. Then he gave this teaching. He recited this text by himself. And as he started, then everybody was very impressed because it was so wonderful. So they started to take notes and things like that. So this is, this is the story of Bodhicitta Avatara. Bodhicitta Avatara is that teaching he gave on that occasion in Nalanda University. And he was regarded as unorthodox because he was, you know, he was not participating in any, because in Nalanda University, everybody studied, everybody went to classes, or everybody, you know, participated, but he was not, that's why. And this Bodhicitta Avatara is, of course, is completely, that is also mentioned in the text in the beginning. He said that there's nothing I said which is not already said by the Buddha. So it's completely coming from the sutras. But, you know, he kind of essentialized all the teachings from different sutras, you know, and put them in a very kind of inspiring and in a small book. So that's why it became very important and became very, very popular text, actually a textbook in India also. And lots of great Indian masters wrote lots of commentaries on this. There were about 50 different commentaries, I think they said. In India, that people have found out, people have mentioned, and in Tibet, of course, there are many more. So this is the story of Shantideva. And of course, if you want to read a little bit more in detail, and then you can also read in the beginning of this, the commentary by Kempo Kunpal, the Nectar of Manjushri speech, that's, you know, published by Shambhala, you will find a short biography in there also. There is not very detailed biographies, you know, you don't find too much detailed biography, but this is how it is found. This is the first question. The second question is from Francois. Thank you very much for showing us the bodhicitta also make us more resilient, strong and stable in the middle of the crisis. To make sure that I have understood well, could you clarify, is absolute bodhicitta recognizing the interdependence and transitoriness or emptiness of arising phenomena, while following as a result of that insight, relative bodhicitta is spontaneously having the strong compassion which must be expressed in appropriate supportive action. Is it okay to say in this way? Yes, you can say it in this way, but actually, you know, bodhicitta means the, you know, the heart of the mind of Buddha, Buddha's kind of Buddha's mind, bodhicitta, Buddha's state of mind is bodhicitta actually. Bodhisattva's state of mind. And Bodhisattva's mind or Buddha's mind is what? It's wisdom and compassion together, you know. What we call a Buddha is when all your, you know, positive qualities are completely, you know, what you can awakened. Your own positive, natural positive qualities are awakened. So this, if we try to explain in simple words, from Buddhist point of view, you can say that wisdom and compassion, wisdom and compassion in short, in essence, wisdom and compassion together is that enlightened mind. So wisdom is usually absolute bodhicitta, and compassion is usually called relative bodhicitta. But they are very connected, you know. So when you say absolute bodhicitta, that means wisdom. Wisdom means that the experience of understanding and experiencing the things as they really are, undeluded mind, awakened mind, the mind completely free from any ignorance or any defilement, any unclarity, that's absolute bodhicitta or wisdom. If you like to, if you try to understand how do we develop that bodhicitta, absolute bodhicitta, how do we try to understand that or experience that, then try to see how things are, The way we see things should be as it is. If we see things as they really are, then it's true. Then it's absolute truth. That's why absolute, bodhicitta. If you see the way we see things and the things and the way they are, how they are and how we see are different, then we are deluded. So therefore, this is about that. So anything that that gives us a little bit more clarity on how things really are is slowly kind of leading to absolute bodhicitta. Therefore, if we see everything, if we see that things are, everything is because of causes and conditions, then we see a little bit more clearly how things are. If we see things are interdependent, we see a little bit more how things really are. If we see things in emptiness, all those, you call those things, but the way things are, how I am, how everything is, how I am, that's also very important. So that's bodhicitta. And then, absolute bodhicitta, and then anything that would, the relative bodhicitta is, of course, kindness, compassion, because when when you are a little bit more able to see things how they are, that should a little bit lessen our too much kind of selfishness, too much self-centeredness. Therefore, a little bit more understanding, understanding, kindness, compassion, to know that everybody is equal, to know that, everybody doesn't want to have suffering and pain, then, we are all, like nowadays, even this coronavirus is showing us very clearly, how similar all of us are. It affects everybody. It doesn't spare, prime ministers and presidents and kings and queens. Neither it spares, the people who are poor and destitute and things like that. It goes to everybody's end. And then, it doesn't touch only one country, not another country. It doesn't, only one religion, not another doesn't select which kind of gods it worship, you know, which what they believe in. It's like that. You know, it's everybody. So the more we understand that, then the more compassion grows. So therefore, the compassion and is usually related to bodhicitta. And sometimes it is easier to start with related bodhicitta, you know, compassion. And if we get some understanding of compassion, that also helps us to understand and experience actual bodhicitta. Because, you know, this, when we say understand, it's not about intellectual understanding only, it's experiential understanding. So therefore, compassion is very much also leading to, you know, absolute bodhicitta, because it's from there you understand more experientially, you know, it's more kind of a, and that's why it's like that. Yes, you can say like this if you like. The third question is, from Linda. If one feels some anger within oneself, but has no intention of acting on it, can this be a form of patience? Yes, maybe it can be. You know, the main thing is that why you don't want to act on this, and that's I think important thing. If you see that, you know, it's not necessary, it's not useful, it's not worthwhile, it's not good. It's not good for me, or good for the other, or good for now, and good for the long term. If you act with anger and hatred and ill will, then that's patience, and that's very good. But if you just, you know, out of fear or out of, you know, not having the ability, feeling kind of overwhelmed, or, you know, because you don't have the power, and then I don't know, you know. But anyway, you know, one should start with somewhere. So it's, I think, good. Then the fourth question Marlo. Relative to the selfless actions of the doctors and nurses at this time, can you give some teaching on the smaller steps we can all make to stabilize and strengthen the armor of fearlessness, and how we can serve others besides doing Dharma practice? For instance, how can we all improve on the path, and what can young people do to help elderly people? Now this is, I must say one thing here, you know, it says, besides doing Dharma practice. If we are helping people, that's Dharma practice. There is nothing called Dharma practice other than that, you know. So therefore, if that you don't call Dharma practice, then I don't know what is Dharma practice. There's nothing called Dharma practice. This is very important to understand, because most people think Dharma practice is just sitting in meditation, or, you know, doing some rituals, or saying some mantras, or, you know, that is also maybe some kind of Dharma practice. But the real Dharma practice is that, working on ourselves, working with compassion, working on, transforming our negative emotions and also helping others, you know, like that. Now here, you know, it's, I think I said it in the beginning also in the teachings that, like, if you are staying home, say like nowadays, it's most of the places, it's a lockdown. And people are asked by the government and also the doctors to stay at home and do not, you know, do not go around too much. Do not go to kind of places where there are lots of people. This is because you don't want to get the virus and you don't want to give it to others. So if you stay home with the intention that I don't want to harm myself, I don't want to get ill, but more importantly, I don't want to give it to the others and, you know, make other people ill and sick. With that intention, if I do that, I think that is also, you know, helping. That's helping. That's Dharma practice. That's helping others, especially older people. Because, you know, if older people get it, it's very difficult that they survive. You know, you can see that so many people have died. And many of them are elder people. It's not that only elder people die. Many young people die too. But, you know, elder people are much more vulnerable. So therefore, this is also like in this way, you know, this, you can't say we have to do it this way. There's nothing like that. You need to think in the situations, in that situation you are in, in that circumstances you are in and others are, then what would be the best thing you can do? You can do something to help somebody. Maybe there is somebody, elderly person, you know, in your locality. Maybe he or she cannot go out to do the shopping, you know, because I don't know what's the situation in many places, but like in India, no cars are allowed to run on the streets. No taxis, no buses, no train, no nothing. So therefore, elder people, even in Sikkim, you know, they can go and shop, you know, like they can get medicines, or they can get like vegetables and things like that. But to go down to the market, to buy vegetables and medicines and then carry it on their back home is quite a, you know, it's not easy for elder people. So if the younger person can help them to do that, you know, that would also be very helpful. So it doesn't matter whatever, you know. So this is, you know, you have to see in what capacity, in what situation you can help, you know. And then if you can't see that it's needed, then you can just sit there. You can do your own, you know, something on yourself. You know? And also, you know, the armor of fearlessness, this is, as I said before, you know, I think important is to understand that just being afraid and too much kind of afraid is not useful, not necessary also, not useful, especially it's not, because, you know, the things happen in the life, you know, good things happen in life, bad things happen in life, very, very bad things can also happen. And you never know when those things happen. And if they happen, then, you know, sometimes there's nothing you can do. It just happens. So you know, the more you afraid you are, the fear doesn't help. Panic doesn't help. So therefore, you know, if I have to die today or tomorrow or, you know, in this week, you know, then I will die. Fearing doesn't, you know, prevent me from this happening. So therefore, you know, it's no use. So I need to, you know, I need to fearlessly, I need to joyfully, happily, meaningfully spend today. Then, you know, that doesn't mean that I have to be, you know, I have to act kind of rashly, or, you know, I have to not be careful, you know, and do something that would be harmful to me or risk myself, risk others. That's not fearlessness. That's not good. I think that's four questions. And then there is two more questions about which is not so much related to the teachings. The first one is, I think it's from Bob. Could you explain the differences of potential outcome between one attending a teaching, practice, or retreat in person versus watching a recording or live streaming of them? In particular, is there something that is lost by not being present in person at these and instead watching a recording or live streaming? If so, what is lost and how can we best utilize recorded or live streamed teachings and practices at this time? Also, are there types of teachings or retreats that it is not appropriate to share the recordings from? You know, this this is a new technology. You know, this is a completely new technology we have now, which I think is very good. So I feel that a teaching that you receive in the presence of a Lama directly, or that you receive a teaching like this or recorded, I think there is not so much difference. You know, the main thing is the teaching. The main thing is the teaching. Sometimes I feel that, you know, when I give a teaching, I give a, you know, talk, I like to see the faces of the people. If I don't see the faces of the people, I don't feel like reaching them. You know, I don't feel like I'm reaching them or communicating with them. If I see their faces, then I can see whether what I'm saying is actually reaching them or not reaching them, or in what way. So according to the people there and according to their reactions on their faces, I can change, you know, I can change what to say and not to say, and, you know, where to go, you know, or explain and where to not to explain and things like that. So the teachers, you know, depend a lot on the how they see their students, you know, especially the how the reaction, the faces. That is one thing I think you will not find in when in the recorded teaching. So it's very general. So so therefore, you know, that's one maybe shortcoming. But otherwise, you know, they are also positive. There's something good, better, because, you know, when you you can listen to a teaching in your leisure time, you know, comfortably. Yeah, you can listen a little bit, then if you're tired, you can stop, then you can listen a little bit later. So therefore, there are also very good things. Some things, you know, the teachings, you know, in Buddhism, it's always like, what teaching? There's so many different teachings and so many different practices and things like that. And it's not always that every teaching is useful or suitable for everybody. So therefore, you know, when a teacher teaches certain group, usually a small group, then you kind of know what you can teach there, what they can understand, what things you don't need to explain too much, what things you need to explain, or you can say something that they will understand. So these kind of things sometimes is there. And so therefore, if I say something which is not suitable to somebody, then the person will listen to it, and then he will not be benefited by that, and sometimes not even not benefited, but also may have some misunderstanding or don't like it. You know, Buddhism is like that. You know, the teaching of Lama, you just heard a little bit something from, you know, one small thing, and then you assume from there that that's the whole thing. And so this is one thing which is a little bit important to understand. Then the next question is, could you talk about if and how tuti can be helpful at this time and how it may work on both a physical, mental, and spiritual level? You know, tuti, this is very Vajrayana, this is very Tibetan. I think you don't have tuti in any other Buddhist culture or anything. This comes from, you know, this six liberations. This is a medicine, but not a medicine for a particular disease. It's, you know, you practice, there is a big Dukchin, and then you practice it, and then you bless all kind of non-poisonous herbs put together, and then you bless it, you know, again and again and again. There's many kind of days and days of practice on it, say mantras and meditation and things like that, day and night together. And then you make this tuti, which is, you know, blessed medicine, you can call it. And this, and also by many monks together, it's not by one person, two person, it has to be no less than 20, you know, sometimes hundreds of people work with the practice. And now this is used, you know, just, you know, sometimes people take it as a blessing, you know, for anything. You know, if you feel a little bit unwell, you take it. If you feel a little bit for anything. So sometimes it helps, sometimes it does not. Yeah, so I don't know. It's like this, you know, mantra and things like that. So, you know, you can, because it, you can eat it. You can eat a little bit. It's not the amount. You don't have to eat a big amount. You can eat small amount, and then, you know, if it helps, it's good. If it doesn't help, it wouldn't harm. That is for sure, because there's nothing, there's no, there's a collection of all the non-poisonous, you know, positive herbs. So there's nothing, no reaction to it. So that's it. So I think that's all the questions this today. So thank you very much. I don't know if there's time for other questions. Is there other questions?
Hello, Rinpoche. Can I ask you a question?
Yes.
It's about the connection between emotions and strong emotions and energy. Like when we are under strong emotions, we can sometimes act on the impulse and do things that we would not otherwise do and which we regret later and so on. Like if we are under the emotion of anger, for instance. But sometimes also we may think that this emotional energy is kind of helpful and even seems necessary to get anything done. So without these strong emotions, is there enough energy? What is the connection of emotions and energy?
I think it is like this. If you act with a positive emotion, positive motivation, then strong emotion like, you know, strong kind of compassion or, you know, love, then you do positive things. And then there's more positive, you know, energy. If you react with a strong negative emotion, then it will become, you know, more negative energy. So I think it's not about emotion, but it's about what kind of emotion. Yeah.
Okay, so but it is some kind of energy in these emotions, or they are kind of our energy is expressed.
Whether you want to call it energy or not is up to you, but you know, it gives you the, you know, push. If you have very strong, like, compassion, then you will do more compassionate things, more helpful things, more, you know, if you are moved by it, you are more moved, yeah. You have strong motivation for them. But if your you know, emotion is like hatred, then you do more destructive things because, you know, it's a you want to harm. You know, anger and hatred is giving you to do something more destructive. Yeah. You know, so that's the difference, you know. If the emotion is a positive emotion, then it's very, very good. It's very useful. If the emotion is a negative emotion, then it gives lots of harm, and you are motivated to do strong, you know, damage. You know, so that's the point. So therefore, when you have an emotion coming up, or you are, you know, then you need to see whether this is a positive kind of emotion or a negative kind of emotion. So if it is a negative kind of emotion, then you need to understand this, and then find a way to let it go, or turn it, or change it. You know, sometimes we can transform it, and then we need to try to generate more positive emotions. Like, you know, when we talk about generating bodhicitta, generating compassion, changing our motivation, and things like that. And there, in a way, we are talking about emotions. We are talking about, you know, our motivation to motivate ourselves, to make our, you know, strong intentions to do something positive, helpful, useful. So I think, thank you very much. I think that's all for today. wish you all the best. And I think in some time, His Holiness Karmapa will be leading some prayers for all the world, so that we will be free from this pandemic, and have also for those people who have suffered and who have died during this difficult time, and also for those who are working hard and great sacrifice for people who are sick all over the world. So thank you very much, and wish you all the best. Thank you.